Welcome to the You and Me podcast, the show where we dive deep into the beautiful world of weddings. I'm Laura, the founder of Wanderlust Creative, an international wedding planning and styling company servicing a global collective of loved up couples.
And I'm Andy, the founder of The Bridal Journey, a source of inspiration for brides, and Revealed, a wedding marketplace where brides can buy and sell pre-loved wedding items.
In each episode of the You and Me podcast, we sit down with a real bride who openly shares their unique wedding planning journey. From the excitement of the proposal to the magical moments of her wedding day, we delve deep into the emotions, the challenges, and the triumphs of planning a wedding.
Join us as we celebrate love, offer practical advice, and share the experiences of brides just like you.
Prepare for heartfelt conversations and inspiring stories on the You and Me podcast. Olivia, welcome to the You and Me podcast. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Now, Liv, tell us a little bit about yourself. We always start the same way. We want to know who you are, what you do, who your now husband is. So fire away.
Yeah, so I'm Olivia. I'm the founder and director of the creative studio and consultancy Olivia and Living. And we've just expanded our portfolio to luxury wedding day content creation, which is really exciting, really new to the industry. But since mine and Lockie's wedding, it's something that I've added to the services that we offer. So that's really exciting. And Lockie is my husband.
And for those people that don't know, run us through exactly what you do. Like, what's a luxury wedding day content creator do? What, tell us for people that would have no clue what it is.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it is definitely really new. So it's really exciting. But basically, I'm there to capture all of the behind the scenes of the wedding day. So that being all of those raw moments, really authentically, just with an iPhone. And I'm always very big on explaining it's not something that overtakes a photographer or videographer. They are very much essential. I am, I guess, the third party involved in that trio, and I pretty much take a step back. I'm behind the scenes. They lead, and I just capture everything that's going on. And it's really exciting because the following day, obviously, you're on that hi, you've woken up and you're buzzing about reminiscing on the night before. And basically, it just means that you get over 1,000 pieces of content straight to your phone that you can look through. It's all raw. It's all authentic. And whilst you're waiting for your photography and videography to come through, you've got something to at least remember the day by. It's something that I think until you've really lived it, gone through the wedding day and woken up, you probably don't understand its true value. So it's difficult. I never want to sell the service too much. But at the same time, I know how beneficial it was for us. So I'm really excited to be offering it to other couples.
And I suppose there's like a few pros to it is there are such long leads with getting your photography back. Sometimes it can take, 6 months plus. You might get a little bit of a highlights reel, but this is such like a great extra. And I think like we're all living in that space where people do really love to see behind the scenes content rather than those like highly manufactured, posy type stuff that you can't really get a feeling from. So I guess the content that you're creating and taking on the day, it's that feeling and, a bit more about what's happening, as you said, like that behind the scenes stuff, but you're kind of capturing, I guess, the essence of like, those longer moments rather than that short kind of photo that your professional photographer might get, which obviously, as you said, is so important. You don't take that over, but it would just be so nice to, the day goes by so quickly, but to kind of relive it through that other lens as well.
100%. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. Basically, the videographer is that movie that you receive all of those beautiful, perfect moments. Content creation is, and my favorite part is hearing the conversations, hearing the background noises, really feeling like you're back and transported in that exact moment in its rawest state. So yeah, very different. I think a lot of people are looking for that documentary style and raw content now as well as an added bonus. So yeah.
And Liv, tell us, how did you and Lockie meet and how did your proposal unfold?
Yeah, so Lockie and I actually met when we were 17. We were each
babies.
Other's first boyfriend. I know. We're each other's first boyfriend and girlfriend. We just met through friends at a party. And then very quickly we just started dating. And yeah, we were pretty much together ever since. And in terms of the proposal, so we'd been together by that point for about 8 years. It was coming up to 2020. And my parents had actually booked a family trip to Noosa and Lockie was going to join us. And in my head, it was that would have been April 2020. And in my head, I was thinking, oh, this would be potentially a nice time to propose, but I didn't want to get ahead of myself. And we hadn't really spoken about rings too much or anything like that either. But then when it came to about February, because we planned it the year prior, obviously COVID happened. So we live in Victoria, so we were in lockdown. So then from there, I pretty much just stopped thinking about proposals or anything like that. So yeah, it wasn't really in my mind. And then as the year progressed, we got to around the June time. So I'm the most annoying person. I'm really hard to surprise. I am the biggest overthinker to the point where I will think about every possible scenario at all times. So then usually I guess a surprise. So yeah, it was always going to be really hard to surprise me, but he did. So it came around to June. He'd planned with my mum for my mum to call me and ask if I can ask Lockie to go around to their house to help fix something at their house. So when I got off the phone, I asked Lockie, he was like, yep, acted completely clueless, but that was planting the seed. Mm-hmm. So then the following week, Lockie and another couple that we're friends with had organized to go out for dinner. Really normal. It was just in that break during lockdown where we're allowed to kind of do a couple of things. So I was getting ready. Lockie had been renovating on the house and got ready to go out for dinner. And then on the way, Lockie was just basically saying, oh, we'll pop into your parents' house and I'll get some measurements for that renovation thing that they needed doing. So I was like, okay, sweet. Didn't think anything of it. Drove up to my parents' house. The road was empty. It wasn't like there was a heap of cars or anything, and the driveway was empty. So then he got out and he said to me, he turned to me, he's like, oh, are you going to come say hi? And I almost didn't get out the car because I thought we were running late for dinner. So I was like, well, no, we're running late. And then he was like, he said, oh, well, you need to come say hi to your parents. That's really rude if you're just in the car. And I was like, okay, yes. So I got out, but I was cool. I was rushing. So I started almost, yeah, pretty much running up the driveway. Meanwhile, Lockie's planned this whole proposal because I should have said that's where we first met. So we first met on my parents' driveway before the party. So the first party that we first met at, he'd come to my parents prior. So we did meet there before. And so as I was walking up the driveway, he grabbed my hand really quickly, spin me around and just dropped the knee. And I saw someone in my peripheral vision running with a camera because obviously I was going so quick. They couldn't even catch you. Like, slow down. The poor photographer would have been beside herself. But yeah, so then from there, it was just very organic. I just don't really remember. I was so grateful that my friends had helped him out with planning a photographer, videographer, and they'd put a microphone in my parents' letterbox so you could hear everything as well. So lovely, because you do forget pretty much everything that they say in that moment. So yeah, and then all of a sudden, both of our families came running out, his brothers, my brothers, and both our parents. And then once I'd gathered myself from that, all of our friends, our closest friends, also came running out. And it was just like one thing after another. And it was just, I know I probably should say this, but I think that's my favorite day ever, even tops the wedding day, just because it was such a surprise and it was just filled with so much love and so organic. So yeah, that was a really special day.
Oh my goodness. And so everybody obviously knew beforehand. How long had they known for though? Like, do you look back and in hindsight think, oh, there is a few things that they dropped that could have been suspicious, or was it just a last minute thing? Hey, this is what I'm going to do quick so that there was nobody spilled the beans.
They all know what I'm like, so they all just avoided me completely in the week prior, basically, because they just know I'm just someone to read into everything. And to be fair, though, it just honestly wasn't even, I mean, obviously during COVID, it wasn't even in my headspace at all. So I wouldn't have even probably put it together even if they did. But no, they all avoided me the week before because he only told everyone, I think it was about 6 days before he was going to do it, because he had the ring a few months before because he thought he was going to propose in April.
So it was burning a hole in his pocket. He's like, I've got to figure out a good way to do this. My God, well done, Lockie. Good job. You guys, obviously you mentioned just before you live in Victoria. So with getting engaged during COVID, not knowing are we going to be in a lockdown for 2 minutes or 2 years, we just had no idea where we lived, what was actually going on. How did you then go about finding your wedding venue and the planning process? What, you know, you are an entrepreneur, you are a businesswoman, you are organized, that all would have helped you, but how did you
do it?
Yes, yeah, so I think in my head from the very beginning, I always knew the venue was going to be, I mean, of course, but just like the absolute priority above everything else, meaning that if we get a venue that's beautiful, we don't have to potentially put as much money towards florists and things like that. So I did always have that in mind. I also knew that most likely it would have to be a self-service venue because of the type of catering that we were after and the little quirks that we wanted included in the day. I knew it needed a lot of flexibility. So I did know that as well. However, Red Leaf, when we were looking, it had only been around for a few years and wasn't very well known back then. So to be honest, I don't even remember the moment I first saw it. It would have just been very deep in an Instagram scroll for sure. I didn't see their website first. It was definitely on Instagram. Mm. But it must have been back in 2021, early-ish. And as soon as I saw it, I knew I wanted a European-inspired venue. We grew up in the Yarra Valley. So there are so many beautiful venues in the Yarra Valley. However, we often go there for lunch on the weekends. So for us, we were a little bit more open to potentially interstate and things like that, just because we were so close to these beautiful venues that we did want something a little bit different. Mm. And as soon as I saw it, I've never seen anything like it in Australia before. It's magnificent. It's just like the most beautiful property. And we only got to have a Zoom video chat with them because at that point we were back in lockdown. So it had to be something as well that I knew I loved via Zoom, which is really difficult. I mean, sometimes you see photos and you think, yep, but then you see it more in a raw state and you think, oh, maybe not. You know, that photo just really captured it in that photo. So as soon as I saw it on Zoom, every single frame was just beautiful. And I just said to Lockie, look, it is interstate. It is only an hour flight from Melbourne. So it wasn't too crazy, but I just said, if we're going to have to book during lockdown, that's the one that I'm the most confident in, and it ticks all the boxes.
And I like the idea how you said you had selected a venue that you didn't have to bring too much into. It was already like aesthetically beautiful, which I think, Laura, you can speak to this, but would dramatically reduce your flower costs because you don't need to decorate. Would you say that people that do choose a venue that needs little do save a lot of money in their budget?
If your priority is not the, if your priority doesn't delve deeper into the requirements of your aesthetic, right? So you may be able to choose a space that ticks a lot of boxes and you're accentuating the venue, right? And this is what I think a lot of people get confused about, and definitely leave like one thing you were not confused about in your process is that you have booked a venue that is so aesthetically pleasing. If you then went and brought bright red or bright purple flowers into it, or made
it something that it's not,
made it into something that it's not exactly, but also, you know, recreated a space. That's not why you book a venue. You book a venue because you walk in and you love the space. There is no point then recreating something. You may as well go to a paddock in the bush and start from scratch. Accentuating the venue can mean that if you spend that little bit more on the space, what you need to bring out their positive light points, so the touch points where the door of the venue is beautiful or the shutters are beautiful, or, you know, you don't need a lot to bring out those elements. It's more accentuating rather than creating. And I think that's really, really important.
And Laura, I don't think I mentioned this, but Laura was actually our stylist.
I was just about to say we never introduced that at the start, which I think is a key thing about this, because Yeah, we never discussed that at the start, which is probably interesting for people to know.
This is where I'm going to be careful.
How did you style it, Laura?
Let's not lead with these questions here. Yeah. But But you're completely right. And, you know, I think you have to take your hat off to yourself, because choosing a venue that, you know, for a lot of people is not cheap, it is interstate. You know, to choose it via Zoom, you had to also have confidence within yourself and Lockie to be like, okay, we've got this, and this is what we really like. And even if there are a few curveballs that crop up, we're still going to make it work.
And can I just clarify, you just did the styling?
Yeah,
the wedding,
yeah.
Not yes. the planning. Yeah,
no. Great. Leave the organizational so skills of this girl. She's good. She's got this.
So you've chosen this venue that was European, it's so beautiful. What kind of styling elements then did you bring? Like, what was kind of Laura working with, and what did you want? And talk me through how you two work together.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd always had in my head the way to make that venue shine would just be classic and white. It has a lot of greenery already. So I was pretty strong when we were chatting, Laura and I was really kind of speaking to just whites, minimal foliage. It really just did not need much greenery at all in my eyes. But obviously we're working to a budget. You know, we did invest a lot in the property, so we did want to cut back a little bit. So Laura was amazing at bringing that to life, keeping it clean, minimal, luxe, but still working within a budget, and that looking like repurposing the flowers that we had for our ceremony into the marquee, which was such an amazing call, and the placement of it where Laura decided to place it, beautiful. The tablescapes, again, this is something that, you know, if it was a never-ending budget, I would have loved to go overboard with orchids. But again, being realistic with Laura, it was very much, okay, well, let's do this in a smart way. Let's dot some orchids around, play with some candles, some linens, and just keeping it really clean, classic. A minimal, but still, because you still have the greenery and the building as the backdrop, having it nice and crisp under the marquee was really nice. But in saying that, you also need to fill it. So I think Laura did an absolutely incredible job.
And I think that's, you underestimate too the details. And we've gone through a previous podcast episode about styling. I think we have, haven't we, Laura? A long time ago. But just the linen, the quality of linen and what the linen looks like on the table. Laura always says, like, bringing that texture in is so important. Like, you don't skimp out on those kind of like small details.
Absolutely.
If you're working with the venue that's already kind of beautifully styled, it's bringing those little, like, that real, as you said, like, high quality, timeless type things to elevate what already is a beautiful venue, but kind of make sure that you're doing that justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Other styling pieces.
And that was another thing, Liv, that, you know, it was really important to you in the process, was you love orchids, right?
You love
orchids. They are your thing. And so, you know, orchids, the $80 a stem orchid. Yeah, those ones. Yeah, great. But it was about, you know, we went back and forth. And I think this is something that everybody who is planning a wedding or who is at this stage doesn't quite realize. They think, oh, it's, you know, well, just, it's beautiful and a creative process is so much fun. But what they don't actually realize is that to be able to hit a budget and to be able to prioritize what you want to invest your money in, you have to work. You don't just get a quote back from a florist and it's perfect. That doesn't happen. That might happen once a year, and that is the parents' black Amex sometimes, that's just coming out and it's just working. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't happen very often. So regardless if you've got a $20,000 budget or a $200,000 budget, whether or not you're investing a lot or a little for yourself or your couple, you have to go back and forth. And, you know, we picked orchids to make sure we had them on the table, but we're like, okay, well, where are you sitting, Liv and Lockie? Because those photos that we're going to get of you, we're putting an orchid in front of you. So it's also strategic placement, you know, making sure that the couple gets the flowers that they want without blowing a budget, but strategically placing them so that the pics they get back include all their special elements.
And so you talked about, like, repurposing florals for your budget. Was there anything else, Olivia, about like managing your budget or things that perhaps you did to save money on certain things about your wedding?
Yeah. So there was a couple of DIY little quirks that we did, which was fun. And again, like, we were chatting to Laura about this. So the table numbers. I just have always had an obsession. My whole office is like this with orchids and travertine, the stone, the textural elements. Although it doesn't necessarily perfectly align with the colourful Italian building, it was working with Laura to see, okay, how can we make this flow and get both to seamlessly flow together throughout the day? So to fill up the table, again, we're working with a budget. We basically just bought travertine papers from Bunnings, just got lucky to throw them on the ground. And then we had a whole box of just chunks of travertine, really raw chunks, and place them and use them as levels for the candles, the flowers, etc. And then we also use some of the big chunks as our table numbers. So then I purchased some acrylic letters just from Etsy with 1, 2, 3, etc., stuck them onto the travertine pieces, and then we had them balancing like upwards as table numbers too. So there were a couple of things that they were quite chunky and big that we could really bring into the tablescape to add that textural element, but it was very, very budget friendly.
So that can you it. Tell me, this might be a really dumb question, but what's travertine?
You'll know.
What is it?
No, it's a
what is it? Is that something I should know?
Oh, no, well, you'll know no. it as soon as you see it.
Yeah, you'll know it if you see it.
It's a stone. It's like a sandstone.
Oh, okay, stone.
A beige white stone.
I just thought if anyone doesn't understand.
No, fair
but
question,
I don't
totally.
Know if I was going to ask that. I thought you might be like, well, okay, good. Now I can imagine it. I was like, I'm not, was it like a plastic thing? I was like trying to work it out in my head.
My bad, I should have said that.
Okay, so repurposing florals. Working out, so you had a wedding website, not paper invitations, was another like important thing that you kind of popped in. Cake as a dessert. And then how did you go kind of managing a bit more of that budget? Did you have lots of spreadsheets? Like someone that's a bit kind of in the wedding industry, was there any like good tips or tricks that you can share about that?
To be honest, I think the biggest thing was, and this is actually from my mum. My mum said, choose 5 non-negotiables. So you have your top 5 priority vendors or like ideas, and you want them executed to the highest quality that you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Then be happy with the other things potentially not being to the highest quality or potentially not being, in your eyes, perfect. But as long as those top 5 run smoothly, are the highest quality. And so in terms of my spreadsheet, that's what it looked like. I had my priority list, and sometimes my priority list would have to change throughout the process, and that was okay. But to be honest, actually, it didn't. I think one thing maybe changed. But other than that, I had, it was venue, stylist, photography, videography, and dresses. They were like my top 5.
Yeah. Okay. And when you say dresses, how many dresses are we talking about? How many looks?
Across 3 days, 6.
6. Were they all custom or from the same designer, or were they just a bunch of white looks from various places?
All various. And the reason being, I just was so incredibly indecisive. And by this point, my entire, which is a huge thing that I think brides face, my entire explore page on Instagram, there was so many options, so many ideas that I loved, and I felt a lot of pressure to choose the dress. Mm. To put all that pressure on the one look, it freaked me out a bit. So I was working with the budget to spread it across outfits rather than just putting it all on one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what that's how I justified it.
Who did your main wedding dress for your ceremony?
So the ceremony dress was a fitted lace dress, complete opposite to what I thought I would get. And it was the very first dress I tried on, or it was a version of the very first dress I tried on. That was a collaboration, as in between two designers, of Chesa and Bar the Couture and Tanya Grigg. So they worked together to create that piece, which was beautiful. The material, I still love that material.
Mm.
And then reception dress was a custom piece by Sam from Oggi Allora Couture in Melbourne. The after party dress was actually my mum's wedding dress from the 80s, which I redesigned secretly. She'd always said to me, this was a little bit controversial, this one, but she'd always said to me in the lead up, I'm her only daughter. So she said, can we make something from my dress? She's like, I don't care. We can cut it up. We can create a bag. We can create something with it. So I always knew she would be completely fine with whatever I did. but she didn't expect me to wear it as a dress. So that was really exciting.
So she didn't know?
To sneak into her house and get it without her knowing. And yeah, redesigned it into a mini dress. I still kept all the original material, but it was a cute little mini dress. So at the end of the night, before we went to our after party, I came out and surprised her and she loved it. And yeah, we had some like an hour or so in that and then went off to our after party.
She wasn't like, oh no, I didn't mean for you to just take off a little bit of material. Not the whole dress. I wanted to keep.
No. It was so funny. I posted a video on Instagram. I'm actually a bit nervous to put it on TikTok just because of how much I got roasted. And TikTok's even more brutal. But
what do you mean?
On Instagram, oh, people, I think it's at something like 3 to 4 million views on Instagram. And people were just coming for me saying they would put me up for adoption if I.
What?
Oh, that's being nice. I'm trying to.
Oh my god!
People are brutal.
I know.
Stay but at the end of the day, lane, humans.
Hey, you know how to make content creation go viral? Yeah. Hey?
This is your job. Exactly.
I didn't know it would be controversial, so that was funny.
Is that on Olivia and Living or your personal?
Olivia and Living is my personal.
Oh, it is so personal. Olivia, that's right.
Is my personal. Yeah, of and then course. I have Olivia and Living yes. event content. Is the
yeah, so we'll have to check that out and
yes,
check out the comments. So
we
see
we get roasted.
Oh, you can only laugh then, at it, can't you?
Yeah,
just so and then ridiculous. I think,
yeah, absolutely. And then the following day was my recovery day. So this is also up there as one of my favorites. It was Kim Kassar. I can't pronounce this correctly, but Kim Kassar's Couture, and it was the Pearl Mini, but we just customized it and didn't have straps, so I made it strapless. And then I had a custom Amanda Barden satin and feather robe, which was it together looked so dramatic. I absolutely loved that look.
That honestly, if I have to say, that was like your mom's dress and that outfit, they blew me away. Those two were amazing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just, you know why though? Because they were so unique to everything, but also like, the situations called for the dramatization of both those moments. And I think it was so fitting.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And I think having minis as well is always obviously different, and how you can style a mini is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then for the rehearsal dinner, I just purchased this online. It was just a silk maxi by Philosophy Di Lorenzo Serafini. So that was just a purchase online. And then the morning was a custom robe with Amanda Barden as well in Sydney. So that was because I always dreamed of having that big ball gowny moment, but it just ended up being that those dresses didn't necessarily suit my body like what I thought they would. So I thought, oh, with the robe, I'll play with some big material, some kind of big structural piece along the neckline. So yeah, they were my six pieces.
Liv, with your... With the fact that you know, this was over 3 days, so people, let's not go viral here either, because it's two dresses a day. That is completely normal. But you didn't get married next door to your house. You travelled with this. So coming from Melbourne up the coast of Australia, it's a really short flight. However, you still need to get on a plane and you still need to get these things. How did you go about transporting all your DIY moments, so the travertine and everything else that you brought with it? How did you transport all these things to your event?
Yeah, we were very lucky. A couple of family members and guests actually wanted to drive. They were making it a bit of a road trip because it was the week prior to Christmas. So they were going on a bit of a road trip, or they just preferred to drive. So we were extremely lucky that very early on, we knew that we had a few cars driving up. Therefore, they were able to take the travertine, because obviously that could not come on a flight. It is very heavy. Lockie could barely even carry it just with the, like, in a box. So very lucky there. Lockie's dad drove up all of the dresses. He was very stressed, but he did a great job. So we're just very, very fortunate. If that wasn't the case, we would have known that early on and probably made some changes and potentially had to, because I think you can pay extra for airlines for extra luggage and whatnot. So we would have just had to do that, I guess.
And so you, okay, so that's pretty good though to be able to have people drive up. That's not something that is a especially if you're thinking a destination event and you can go overseas for things like that. So to safely transport all your precious things was really, really important. You had a lot of elements in your day that, you know, were DIY or were specific to you and Lockie and things that you really wanted to include. And like you said earlier, you had to choose a venue that allowed the flexibility to be able to do those things. It wasn't a 5-hour package at the NVG. So tell me what out of all your choices for your wedding day, what were the most important things that you look back on and say, you know what, that memory to me is the best?
Yeah. So there's definitely a few. I would say the number, like, top one by a mile is walking down the aisle. I think everyone probably says that, but also having the choice. So we made the choice to keep guests all seated. And yeah, you'll remember this, Laura. I was very big on having a chair for everybody. Logistically, it's a bit of a nightmare sometimes, but I did want everybody sitting on a chair and including the wedding party. So we didn't have any bridesmaids, any groomsmen standing up. The two best men, which are Lockie's brothers, they stood up next to him whilst the bridesmaids walked down, and then everybody was sitting when I walked down, just because it felt like a really nice connection purely for Lockie and I. So it was like, I don't know, it was just like the eye line was there. There was nothing distracting, I guess, if you can visualize that. So that was a really nice moment. And then we actually had the wedding party seated throughout the whole ceremony too. So that whole walking down the aisle and just vows and everything feeling like it was just us two in our own little bubble was really lovely. And then I would say the second moment would have been, we all went up. So after we had our mains, we all, and when I say we all, myself, Lockie and the bridesmaids, and got changed into a second look, the bridesmaids included. And then we walked back down with champagne with some sparklers, headed straight to the champagne tower to some music, poured the champagne tower. Really important to keep the vibes going because it can get very awkward after a first few seconds. So keeping that music going, keeping your energy high, because the guests will mirror your energy. So as a couple, keep the energy going as you're pouring. And then straight away, we walked straight to the dance floor. So the energy was still high, had our first dance. And then at the end of the first dance, we actually brought in some dance music. And so then we brought everyone onto the dance floor. We told our bridal party to join us at the end, but then luckily all the guests just joined in anyway. And then that was it for the dance floor for the whole night. So the flow of that moment, I think, was a really, really nice moment. And it got that whole party started.
Now, I mean, I know the backstory of so many things, so I'm just going to lead with a few questions that we don't usually talk about here. But Liv, your first dance song, and your first dance, can you, like, again, I don't know, there's so many memories from your wedding that is just so beautiful, but this, tell our listeners where the song was from and what kind of special moment you're able to include with your first dance.
Yeah, so for our first dance, so I have a background in dance. So I always wanted a bit of focus and a lot of, like, I guess, emotion to come from that first dance. Lockie's not a dancer at all. He absolutely hates anything like that. Doesn't have
social
media. He did
so good though.
He did. He did amazing. So for that, I knew that the song was quite a big component of that, of course. And one of my really close friends who was actually going to be a witness, she was due to give birth a week prior. So she was unable to attend the wedding. Now, she is an incredible singer. Her name's Bonnie Anderson. She won Australia's Got Talent years ago. And she's done so many other things since, but she worked with Joel Sunny, who is an incredible violinist as well. And they created this custom piece for If I Lose Myself by One Republic. And they created this, yeah, it was like a violin vocal, just beautiful rendition of the song. And then our DJ, who was our DJ on the night, Eric Seidy, who is also a really close friend of Lockie and I's, he then created it. So after that moment had passed, it then transitioned into the original If I Lose Myself Tonight, which is a dance anthem. So that's when everyone joined us on the dance floor. So it was just a really, yeah, beautiful moment. And to have Bonnie's voice there, to feel like she was actually there. And she actually recorded it on her phone, because I said, she has a studio at home, but I said, I want it to sound like you're with us. And so it's not like, you know, overly produced. Yeah. So yeah, she recorded it on an iPhone and put it together, which was beautiful.
What a nice touch. She has a beautiful voice. I know who you're talking about. Well, that was so lovely hearing all about that. And thanks so much for coming on. It was really great to hear all about your wedding, especially because we have posted it on the Bridal Journey before and worked together on a few things. So it was really nice to hear all those special details behind your wedding day.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's been so lovely to chat.
And if you need any content creation at your wedding, visit. Do you want to just tell us your Instagram handle for your...
Yeah. So for all luxury wedding day content creation, it's oliviaandliving.eventcontent.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Liv.
Thanks for having me.